Nixon with you. You guys can always interact with us on the Jays Southland Soul Service text line, 913-586-7965. I say text line, it's also the phone line a little bit later on in the show. Get you guys to maybe chime in on something we're going to discuss around 11 o'clock and how much of a concern it is for you and the chances of this team actually going undefeated. That team being the Kansas City Chiefs. You can watch this on video as well. Video stream is up and running. Facebook, Twitch, Twitter, X, YouTube.
Subscribe. Like. Yeah. Rate, review. I don't know that I should really learn the proper terminology. Subscribe, rate, review, I believe, is what people go with these days. Mm-hmm. We don't want to seem like the olds. We're the youngest show on this station. Actually, what's Dusty's mean bringing that the morning show down to?
That brings it down, but Dusty's.
Oh, like actually, we're not the youngest show. Well, with Drew, does Drew help us? Mac in the morning. If we're factoring all three people, are we the oldest show?
No. No. Because Rob and I are about the same age. Carrington's like a year or two older than me.
What I'm saying, though, is that Drew and I's average age with yours, that's right in that same wheelhouse, man. I'm driving our average up.
Yeah, not to throw Bob's business out there, but isn't he like 10 years older than you?
I don't think he's a full decade, but he's definitely older than me.
All right. Anyway, Max over here. Max still over there shaking his head. What is Mac?
We are debating it right now.
You just turned, what, 27?
28? I just turned 29.
Oh, okay.
Dude, 20. We're screwed. We're the oldest
Mac
show at the
station. Mac is 25? I can't see over. There's a glare. Sorry.
26.
Okay.
26.
And then he said, Mac told me Fefesco is 47.
How old's Dusty?
Doesn't Dusty 38, 37?
I think Dusty's a little bit older than you, Gold. So I think
the morning show is the oldest show on the station. Suck it, old fogies.
I'm glad we got this worked out.
The show knows how to do things. We're not the youngest, though. That's the drive, I think.
I think so. It's your fault. Did you hear it? It's your fault.
I already took the blame.
It's your fault for that. Anyway. I'm glad we got that sorted out today,
That's
guys.
It's an important thing to get into.
You know, it really, really is.
We're told we have a new audience because of the FM side, and there's new people finding the show every day. They should get to know us, and they should know that we're the 14th midday mid-market show in the whole country.
Wow, yeah.
And the second youngest show on this station. Maybe the youngest. Still got to do some math on that.
That is true. Yes, that is very true. All right. While we're talking history and we're talking years and all that, let's put some context behind what we're seeing from this defense this year, because it deserves to be discussed as one of the all-time great defenses.
It does. And I think that we started this conversation a little bit last year correctly in the pre-show. You'd mentioned last year we talked about this. Should this be considered the Chiefs' greatest defense of all time? And then people cited some from like the 60s and 70s that you and I certainly didn't get to watch. And some of the ones we did watch with Tom Bahali and Eric Berry that were top five in points per game and had several, I think, people who were on pace to be and are Chiefs Hall of Famers, at least on that end. There is no way you can't tell me right now this defense should not be considered for all-time great defense run. It starts with the stat that they're currently in the active part of, which is the Chiefs' streak of 28 games of not allowing 30 points. It is the first time in 17 years that teams have done that, and that was the Ravens, a team that, Gold, in our lifetime, we probably deem the greatest defense we watched. Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, we remember them being a dominating force every single year. I do not know why we would not give the Chiefs that kind of credit. And the only reason I could think of is there aren't enough Hall of Famers on the field. Chris Jones is going to be a Hall of Famer. There is no other player I can guarantee you will end up there. I would say the early career for Trent McDuffie is certainly a positive sign.
Right.
And then really nobody else probably has a realistic chance of being in that. But look at the numbers. The stats support that this is as good as the Bucs. Early 2000s, the Ravens in the 2000s.
Yeah,
I mean, look, I didn't watch the Steel Curtain or the whatever. But
thinking of age, none of us were around to watch that, and even the 85 Bears. So there's definitely that perspective that is warranted. But even last year, we were having a conversation just in terms of how this defense had stacked up in Chiefs history. That was the conversation last year. Now we're taking it a step further and talking about in the NFL history. But last year, I know we got some pushback when we said last year's defense was the best in Chiefs history. We got a lot of people saying, wait. And it probably goes back to the Hall of Fame stuff because people were bringing up guys like Bobby Bell and Emmett Thomas, et cetera.
Yeah, Hall of Famers.
You know, looking at what that defense was capable of. And there's definitely some context that is needed. But I think what makes this so special? Not only because they're winning multiple rings during it, that's definitely part of the equation during the stretch. They've already won one ring and they're the favorite to win another one this year. That has to count for something when the team is being led by the defense.
Correct.
That's part of it. The other equation is, when you reference the 2000 and the 2002 Ravens, and heck, I'll throw in the Bucks team even from that 03 Super Bowl against the Raiders.
Warren Sapp, Derek
Brooks.
When
it was Dungy versus Gruden and all that. That was before they flipped spot, or before Gruden went to Tampa. And that was still an era in football where it was not as pass friendly. It was getting there. It was definitely trending in that direction at that point, but the rules hadn't fully shifted to be even more offense friendly. And so to me, in 2023, now 2024, what defenses are doing, if you're dominant like the Chiefs, if you're led like the Chiefs are by this defense, to do that now in this era, I think is somewhat more impressive, man. We see the NFL has become way more of an offensive league. And I know early this year we discussed how scoring was down. It's not really anymore. And so I think that context is needed if we're going to have the historical conversation about the defense, is that let's give them credit. I think it's harder to play defense right now than it was then. We hear all the time from former players that, oh, I could have hit that guy and I wouldn't have been a penalty at all. And now you can barely touch the guy or whatever. Like that kind of stuff, that makes your job tougher if you're McDuffie, if you're Chris Jones, anybody.
If you're a defensive lineman trying to take a quarterback out of the game. I'm sure I could hold a team to 12 points a game if I was allowed to, I don't know, essentially commit attempted murder on the quarterback for 14 plays a game where you could wrench into their legs, twist around their body, a million other things. And I think that's part of the reason it doesn't get mentioned. In my lifetime, there are the two we mentioned, the Bucks and the Ravens. I think about those in my childhood. I would say the Seahawks, Legion of Boom.
For sure, 2015 Broncos.
Because that's back-to-back Super Bowl trips that were led by the defense when Russell Wilson was a very young thing. Maybe this comes down to they need a nickname. Legion of Boom, Steel Curtain. Do they need a nickname? Maybe a nickname would help?
I don't know if they need a nickname. I don't think they need a nickname. I mean,
I don't have any suggestions. I'm just saying, is that holding them back?
The 2015 Broncos defense that carried Peyton Manning to a title, I don't think they had a nickname.
Not that I remember now.
No, but like that defense, if you look at the numbers, truly was one of the all-time greats. That's why they were able to win the Super Bowl. But
they carried Peyton Manning's corpse to a Super Bowl that year.
Yeah, I don't have a name for you. I mean, I also think this goes back to us talking about Steve Spagnuolo. It all ties together. You're right that, you know, maybe there's one Hall of Famer in Chris Jones, but the scheme is why this works. And that's where Spags, to me, should become the first coordinator to ever go into the Hall of Fame based on what he's been able to accomplish. Because what you said about there maybe being just one, we'll see the rest of the careers for Trent McDuffie and maybe somebody else. But that, to me, speaks to how great of a scheme it is for Steve Spagnuolo. They can kind of plug and play in some certain spots. You know, right now, with what they're doing at corner opposite Trent McDuffie due to the Jalen Watson injury. Hell, that it was Jalen Watson before. He was playing at such a high level. No disrespect to him, but like he's kind of just a guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he is.
And so that makes this more impressive for Spags.
I don't think there's any argument that this is the single greatest defensive run we've seen in Chiefs history, which probably adds to the whole we're in the golden era part of it, right? We're getting the best 2-3 year run of defense in Chiefs history, coupled with Patrick Mahomes and Super Bowl rings and a million other things.
You see the suggestions. We're getting a lot for a nickname of this defense.
Oh, okay.
We're getting the Red Wall from multiple people. The Red Wall.
I don't hate that.
The Red Storm. The Red Scare. The D of Red.
Someone says the Broncos were no fly zone.
Is that what it was?
But that one didn't stick. I don't remember it now.
Okay.
But I do think if you're talking about from like this sounds so stupid, but these national, like, you look, Bleacher Report's got an article up and they put the 1969 Chiefs in the top 10 of greatest defenses of all time, right? So not all of them had them. Someone had to do some research. But for the ones that we remember, some of them just didn't, they had nicknames. And if you want national pundits talking about them, sometimes you need to have stuff to say like that. It sounds stupid, but sometimes
the closest we have to that here is Chris Jones being the CEO of Sac Nation, right? That's the closest we kind of have to anything right now attached to this defense.
They don't even have a single player with a nickname, you know? Like, do they have a single defensive player with a nickname?
No, not that fans
not
know.
That kind of
not
nickname,
that fans
right?
know and stuff. I'm sure in the locker room, some players have a nickname or
like
whatever.
The Royals have Pasquatch, our NFL insider, who will join us coming up in 20 minutes.
He is going to join us in 20.
But yeah, I just don't know. The Red Scare? Do we want to bring back stuff?
I don't have a better suggestion. I'm not really digging many of the names so far that have come in, but that's why we can workshop this here. The Red Wall, I understand it. I get it. None of them have stood out and been obvious, though, where they're like, okay, that's the one.
I think in order for Sac Nation to just be like the name of the defense we remember, I think they would have had to lead the league in sacks one of those years. They were second and third. I don't know where they are now this year, but...
Someone says Stone Cold Jones. We do have a nickname. Okay.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, sorry. But again, if somebody's just casually mentioning him, I don't know that they say it that way.
Furious George. Yeah, I don't know if that one is... people will call Karloftis that, but that was... I don't know if that's fully stuck at this point or not.
I think they'll say...
Better than the Georgie Porgy thing that our old producer tried to get going. Nick, shout out Nick.
You're still anti-Georgie Porgy pudding pie?
Yeah, that one never took off. I know the shirts were made, but it never took off.
I don't even have one of those shirts.
No, I don't either. I never got one. We gave those... when we did our guest bartending with our friends over at Social and Waldo. The owner of Waldo... not Waldo. The owner of Social at Waldo liked the shirts a lot.
Someone said every single name that you've listed so far is better than Club Fantastic. Look, that didn't last long.
That's why we got rid of it.
We moved on.
And we still haven't had a permanent sign made because we're still...
I'm still leery on the fan club. I'm still...
I know you didn't like it. The fan club is fine, but also I think we should just... Kind of just made it simple. Instead of Club 610, we just called it the 965 Club or Club 965 and just been done with it.
Yeah. In retrospect, that kind of does sound better than the fan club.
Just be done with it and just go with the numbers of the station again and let's move on. Mm-hmm.
So we can stop guessing what we want to call it.
Yeah.
It's going to go through three name changes in a single year. All of a sudden, we're the Washington Commanders franchise.
Someone says they call them the Wolf Pack on defense.
Someone said the Red Curtain of Terror.
That's just too many words.
You can't do the curtain thing. It was already the steel curtain. I don't think you can just flip it. I don't think you can do that.
Just doesn't.
People mentioning the 90s, there was like the tribe. Yeah, I don't think that's coming back. Okay. We'll workshop this. 913-586-7965. We'll get back to this a little bit later on in the show as we're talking about just the historical context of where this defense is at. How about the rest of the AFC, though? And just where things are shaping up. Right now, the top three AFC teams with the best Super Bowl odds after Week 8, Chiefs plus 450, Ravens plus 650, the Buffalo Bills 11-1.
So pretty good odds for the Bills.
Same names, man. Here we are again.
Well... Look, the Texans, at least, if they're not on
this
list.
They're not top three. Yeah.
They would at least be re-entering that conversation, hypothetically. First off, I'm not saying the AFC's doesn't have some top-end talent. It obviously does. How do the Ravens have almost twice as good of odds to win the Super Bowl? They just lost to the Browns, and they have, and I say this quite confidently, 0.00% chance of getting the number one seed. They are going to have to...
It's because the Ravens beat the Bills,
I know, but they're going to have to travel for at least one game in the postseason. I think there's a decent chance that they're kind of barreling towards maybe the three seed, which would mean they'd have to travel for two games in the postseason. They should not have the second best odds. They eliminated themselves from the number one seed because they are four games effective back from Kansas City. They are three games back in the standings, and they do not have the tiebreaker against them. Their big advantage is they currently sit above the Bills for the same thing you just mentioned on the tiebreaker. I think it's a three-horse race for the AFC, for the number one seed, let me say. The Chiefs, the Bills, and the Texans. The Texans' schedule, they play nobody in their division. Trevor Lawrence and the Jags were already bad, and now they have no weapons, right? All their other weapons are hurt, and they were bad before that. The Colts have never gotten off the ground with Anthony Richardson, even though they've been mildly competitive this year. I'll at least give them that, right? And then the Browns, I guess, just got better at least because their starting quarterback went down. The only time you can say that in the history of the NFL, but they still stink too. That's in the North. But like in the South, I mean, there's just no real... The Titans, that's the other one. They stink. So like there is no threat. Don't you think it's just down to those three for the number one seed? The Ravens are out.
I won't eliminate them entirely because they did beat Buffalo. And so it's really just the Chiefs. And I know we're looking at them and looking at the math on that. But if the Chiefs were to slip up against Buffalo, were to lose a game head-to-head to Houston later, and then there's one other one, all of a sudden you're starting to get the three or four losses. It would require the Ravens, though, to essentially run the table. So I get why you want to eliminate them. But remember, the odds I referenced to you were to win the Super Bowl, not to be the number one seed.
Yeah.
And so, yes, for a number one seed, sure. But we know you don't have to be a number one seed to win the Super Bowl. And the Chiefs obviously proved that a year ago. So that's why, like, I have no problem with the Ravens having better odds than the Bills to win the Super Bowl. I think the Ravens are a better football team than Buffalo. I truly do. We all know, though, come playoff time, we've discussed this over and over about Lamar's performance in the postseason. Josh Allen has performed well in the postseason, even if the wins haven't come. And that's why it's weird you get into the win-loss record solely for quarterbacks. But I think the odds are correct. Do I think the Bills have a better chance of being the one seed than Baltimore? Yes, they play the Chiefs still head-to-head, and the math would be in their favor on that. But I actually think the odds are correct. Who is more likely, in my opinion, to come out of the AFC if the Chiefs don't? The Ravens or the Bills? I agree the Ravens would still be my answer.
I still think it's the Bills. And I'm a big Lamar Jackson believer, but I mean
the Bills just haven't won at all in the playoffs.
I know.
And
I understand that, like, the Chiefs proved you could not be the number one seed, dude, but they're an exception to the rule to me, not the rule. And I think a lot of times for the AFC teams, they got to have at least a game or two in their back pocket. Right now, for the Ravens to get the number one seed over the Chiefs would have to finish the season 6-4. Reminder, they're 7-0. And the Ravens would have to go 7-1. So, I mean, 8-1. Sorry, 8-1. And that's just to catch Kansas City. That would still require them to pass Buffalo, pass Houston, and pass the Steelers. So they got to get past three teams. Go 8-1. Now, if they go 8-1, they're going to pass at least a couple of those. And the Chiefs would have to go 6-4. They're eliminated from the one seed conversation, which makes it hard for me to think that they're going to be a real. I think they kind of need that. Baltimore in particular feels like they kind of need that. And that didn't help them last year.
It did not, yeah.
But it helped them get to the AFC title game. The other times they've been a wild card team or in the other parts of the division. And they got to fight for their life in their own division still, too.
They do. The Texans are just interesting right now because Nico Collins is banged up. Stephon Diggs just suffered an injury. They play on Thursday night against the Texans. We were looking at it before the show. The Texans are 1.5-point underdogs on Thursday against the Jets. Like, that's the game. If you ever want to talk about the Texans having a chance to be the one seed, the Texans, you can't drop a game to the Jets on Thursday. That line is just really interesting. It stinks out loud. We'll talk about that.
There? Why does that reek so bad?
Yeah, we'll talk about it tomorrow on that betting show, because it's one of those lines where it's like it seems so obvious that you should take the Texans, but that's where you got to be a little careful sometimes.
I don't know if we're really going to know about the Texans until they play the Chiefs because of the schedule that you mentioned. And right now, it's hard to. I wouldn't say they're the first option. If you had to say here's the threat to the Chiefs, I would say the Bills are maybe the biggest threat as of right now. The Texans are the outlier. I think we need to see a little bit more of them this season because we've seen CJ Stroud obviously be great last year. He's been fine.
He's definitely not as good. Yeah.
But I think also part of that, to the point of what you guys have brought up, Nico Collins is hurt. You know, Stephon Diggs is having he's not having as good of a season.
Schultz hasn't been nearly as good. He was great last year.
I just wonder, I think there's more to see, and then who knows? If they beat the Chiefs, then obviously, okay, they're legit. But I think we need to see more from the Houston Texans before we say they're a legit threat to the Kansas City Chiefs above Buffalo or maybe Baltimore if you want to put them in that equation.
I will say I knocked the Bengals for their resume. The Texans' resume is not exactly strong. Their wins, even though they are 6-2, are against the Bears in the opening week of the season.
That was a close game, too.
The Jags, another close game. The Bills, that's an impressive win. That you really did something there. Then the Patriots and the Colts. You're like, I mean, okay, I guess. But they're getting ready to take on the Jets on the road, then the Lions at home, and then a couple weeks after that, you know, like maybe a month after that, they'll get the Chiefs too. Like, they'll be tested by the time thing comes around. This is what we've talked about in the AFC just before. The Chiefs are a massive front runner. What are the odds? You pulled up the odds for the Super Bowl. What are the odds when the Chiefs win the AFC at this point? Even money? 2-1? Like, if they're 4-1 to win the Super Bowl, they got to be 2-1, even money, maybe, to win the AFC as it rates right now. They are the prohibitive favorite to do that.
They are 2-1, Ravens plus 350, Bills plus 420, Texans 6-1 right now to win the AFC, to go to the Super Bowl.
So, I mean, I just think,
be the number one seed, they're minus 290.
Okay, so they're,
minus 290 to be the one seed. The Bills are 6-1. The Texans are 7.5-1. And then to our point about the math not being there for Baltimore, they're 23-1 to be the number one seed. But again, I still have no problem with the Ravens having better odds to go to the Super Bowl than Buffalo. But the number one seed conversation, the Bills and Texans still have the head-to-head matchup with Kansas City. That's why they're still showing their odds the way they are.
For some reason, I don't think the the Ravens are that much of a threat to the Chiefs to go to the Super Bowl because of what we've seen when they've played each other and what we've seen previously, where the Bills are more of a threat to me because Josh Allen can literally be Superman. He can literally, I know, but he can literally be Superman. Lamar Jackson has never been Superman in that game where he's elevated them and the way that they look against the run. That's basically the Ravens' MO. I think that that's, to me, I would be more concerned facing the Bills right now than I would be the Ravens just because of the style of the play. And everybody was like, well, the Ravens, that wasn't the best Ravens team in week one. The Chiefs weren't. That's not the best version of the Chiefs either. And they won the game. I just think that if you had to rank the threats, I think the Bills are one. The Ravens might be two, depending on what we see out of the Texans the rest of the way.
I will say your Cincinnati Bengals still have the sixth best odds to come out of the AFC, despite being nowhere close to the sixth spot in the playoffs. They are at better odds.
I intentionally left them off my list, but now that you mention them, I mean, hey,
they have Chargers with worse odds at 28-1, Colts 38-1, Dolphins 40-1, Broncos 55-1. Not that I think any
Broncos
of those teams are winning
it,
but that's what's interesting about it. Not that I think the Broncos are winning the AFC by any means, but the Bengals aren't anywhere near a playoff spot, and yet they still have much better odds than those other teams.
It's because the Broncos and Chargers are in playoff spots right now, right? As the 6 and the 7.
No, that's what I'm saying is they have playoff spots, but they still have worse odds than Cincy to win the AFC even.
I think it's just because when you look at those teams play, you think the Bengals are better than them. It's just, I mean, but I guess, are they?
Right. I don't think
better
so.
Better than the Broncos?
They do play each other.
They aren't better than the Broncos. The Broncos are not a good team, neither is Cincinnati, but the Broncos are elite on one side.
Did you guys watch the Steelers? Did you watch the Steelers last night? I'll give Russ credit again. That was another nice performance. That's 2 in a row.
That's the best he's looked in 2 years.
I mean, seriously, that was better than the performance last week. Last week, he got bailed out by some unbelievable catches from Pickens. But last night, I thought Russ was really good.
No, I was.
Against a Giants team that overall stinks, but their defense is legit.
No, Russell Wilson looked good. I mean, look, I've said this before, and I'll still say this. If for some reason the Steelers ended up being the number one seed, a team that we did not even entertain in this conversation, by the way, for the number one seed, even though they have only 2 losses, just like all the other teams mentioned. If that's the team that gets you for the number one seed, okay. Oh no, not the Steelers. But if we're just individualizing, they're playing very well. Russell Wilson looks good again. The weapons are still good. Pickens is very talented.
Your hope should be that the Steelers somehow end up as the 2 seed or something, and they knock off
Ravens.
Exactly.
One of these teams who has at least more consistently been a pain in the ass.
Well, just quarterback play. If Pittsburgh ends up as the 2 seed and they win a playoff game, they obviously are playing good football. You don't accidentally fall into that. But we all just know in the playoffs, usually it's about the quarterback, right? Usually the Chiefs defense is incredible. And all that. Usually it's about your quarterback and how they perform in that game. And if I have to choose between playing Russell Wilson or Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, I mean, come on now. Obviously, I'm going to choose playing Russell Wilson. I don't care how great they're playing at the time.
That playoff, if we get a Steelers-Chiefs AFC title game, that's going to be a 13-9 Chiefs win or whatever the hell it is. It's going to be the ugliest.
You might be beautiful.
It's going to be the
beautiful.
The
I might take under
game.
Those points.
Oh,
I'm not even sure 13-9 is the final of that one.
That's going to be like a 32.5 game spread. That'll be gross.
Last night's Giants game, what was it, 9-9 at halftime? Giants and Steelers?
And then a punt return eventually was the first touchdown of the damn
that's
thing.
True.
16-9. So it took a while before we even got an offensive score. We mentioned your Bengals. I was really proud of Nickelodeon and the NFL for being smart. They figured out a way to make Cowboys and Bengals interesting, animating them and making it a giant cartoon.
I think it's Nickelodeon? I don't think it's...
Or whatever it is. It's Simpsons. So Fox, I guess.
Yeah.
At least on this end. Nickelodeon, it's essentially the same version of those, but you're right. Fox is animating a full game between the Cowboys and the Bengals as the Simpsons. I am now more interested in watching those two teams
play
football.
Are you watching the Simpsons version of the game?
If I watch that game at all, it'll be the Simpsons version. Because otherwise, why the hell would I want to watch Cowboys-Bengals right now? Those teams are no good.
On December 9th, Bart will team up with the Bengals while Homer joins the Cowboys.
Jeez,
we also have Marge,
Bart,
Lisa, and Maggie. Drew, you've always been a big fan. You said we need more whiteouts in the league, and we need more things to be excited. Now you've got... This is pretty close for you. This will get you more excited for the game.
I'll be honest. I don't get excited about the whole cartoon thing. I was excited about the whiteout over the weekend,
but
until that was wasted.
Scooby-Doo. You not watch the Simpsons?
I have not watched a single episode of The Simpsons in my life.
I'm not a Simpsons guy either, but I am surprised you're not based off what we've discussed. The Simpsons Fun Day Football telecast will be on ESPN Plus and Disney Plus, while the game airs over on ESPN.
I will not be watching
ABC.
The Simpsons
it's the second year. Last year, they did this with Toy Story. That was the Falcons Jags game.
I think that game might actually be exciting because both defenses stink. That game might be 45-35. That might be a barn burner.
Which cartoon do you want to see next?
Ooh, good question.
Well, they've been doing the Toy Story ones on ESPN Plus.
Simpsons and Toy Story. We got SpongeBob doing this thing over on Nickelodeon.
I'm trying to see a Monsters, Inc. one.
That's actually not a bad suggestion.
Mike Wazowski, you know?
That's pretty good. That's pretty strong.
Sully is all the offensive line. Yeah.
That's actually a really good one.
That's pretty good. Lot of variance in that.
Yeah.
Any of this?
I'm trying to think what else you could do. Yeah. Toy Story is one of the best options. You've got kids. Is there a newer cartoon that I'm missing or something? A new animated show that I'm missing?
I mean, they're not going to make like Inside Out characters, right?
Look, a Frozen version of the NFL. Oh gosh, we'll be singing throughout the whole freaking broadcast.
Again, not enough characters, you know? Like, there's really like six main characters essentially in those. You need something like an ensemble cast, you know? That's why Toy Story works.
Can I just do Cars but football?
Sure. What's wrong with that? Lightning McQueen at quarterback, obviously.
Yeah, Cars with football.
They could do that. There's multiple.
I mean, you know, Tomater feels like he's probably offensive lineman or blocking
tight end.
Someone
said Shrek.
Shrek's pretty good, honestly.
That's a good option, but I haven't. Goodness, Shrek.
You weren't a Shrek guy?
What about The Incredibles?
I was until they ruined the series.
Incredibles has enough power to do it.
Incredibles is good. I was a Shrek fan until they made five different versions of that movie.
I only saw the first two.
First
two are the only ones I've seen.
Frozone feels like a wide receiver type, right? Gliding.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, it definitely feels like there's some play there. Incredibles feels like it works.
All right, up next, though, let's keep talking NFL with our VFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino, joins us. Maybe we'll ask him the same question, a suggestion for that alternative telecast next.
He's had songs written about him without asking for it.
Pasquantino, I want it. Now it's time for Pasquantino.
Mythological creatures and sandwiches have been named after him.
Beefy and Italian.
And he also thought the Davante Adams trade was going to save the Jets.
Jets.
Welcome back to the show, our VFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino.
Yeah, it's that time of the week where we check in with our VFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino.
Hold on. I'd like to make it clear. I never said that about the Davante Adams trade.
That was editorializing that by our boss.
You can blame Speck.
Was that Steven Spector?
That's right.
Yeah, you did that? Yeah. Hey, Steven, keep my name out of your mouth. Okay, all right, I'm ready.
Yeah, well, look, while we're making complaints and addressing issues, can we address your TV setup? We saw the photo, Vinny, from the weekend. What's the story there? What, it looked like the TV was crooked. There's also, like, no furniture.
Yeah, okay, so first off, I'm a simple man, but I like sports. So the TV's being crooked, I can explain. One, the people who framed my TVs did a fantastic job. Two, to the left of the screen, which you can't see, I have my gaming monitor where I play video games. And while I play video games, the two TVs on the left can move and they face me. So I rotate them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I put them back, I don't even them up because I don't care. Because I don't have that kind of OCD
that
apparently all my Twitter followers have. So, regardless, I'm happy, and it's my house, so I don't care.
Do you have a coffee table there? Feels like you could use, like, a table there.
No, there is absolutely – there's a couch, there's a chair where I play video games at my desk, and then there's the TVs. I know I need to put an entertainment center, and I probably should get a rug, but I don't care.
Where do you put if you're drinking something, where do you set your drink?
I just put it on the floor. I invest my money where I want to put it, and coffee table is low on the list when it comes to TVs or video games or something for me. So
okay, that's fair. That's, you know what? This is why we have you on. We like to get to the really deep stuff.
Uh-huh. That's right.
What's the video
Ask
game?
Ask me about my tweet. Ask me about my tweet. I know you want to, Cody. Ask me about my tweet.
We'll get to him in a second. Don't worry. We will get to him. What's the video game you're playing then? You said you got the monitor set up.
Well, I started playing college football again last night, but mostly Call of Duty came out last week, so I've been playing Call of Duty. I rip Fortnite with my friends almost every night. I play Madden, a lot of Madden. I went 18 and 1 with the Jets. I lost in the Super Bowl to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That was heartbreaking. A lot of my video games are actually spent playing Madden with the Jets because they can win a game there.
Wait, which tweet? Now I think I missed Vinny.
The Lock and Four.
Oh, I do want to ask you about that. Look, I want to actually congratulate you. Lock and Four was already an enemy of the people in these parts, and now you've handled it. I don't know why people call for the injuries of players. We ran into this with Mike Florio once in this town.
Well, so I need to make it clear, I did not know about all this history, and I still don't. No, and I didn't know when I tweeted what the guy does. I just know he has like 300 some thousand followers on Twitter, and I remember specifically him saying to run fastballs or whatever it is up in on the DH's hand. And the funniest part about the tweet is the thing I was most upset about is that he referred to me as the DH, and then he referred to me as the Pasquatch in that tweet. So it was more so I took it as disrespect of, a few weeks ago I was just the DH, huh? And now I'm the Pasquatch. So then I was like, you know what, Jason? Weren't you the guy that wanted to hit me? I got no problem pitching in. No problem at all. You want to pitch in? I get it. That's a part of a scouting report. It's not actually a part of my scouting report for the most part, but it is a part of a scouting report. And I get it. I was totally prepared. I don't know if you guys noticed in the playoffs, I think I hit more foul balls than I've ever hit in my life. Because I was ready for people to pitch in. So I got no problem with people pitching in, but don't refer to me as the DH when you know who I am. I just don't like that.
He needs to look up his own scouting report. You played a lot of games at first base this year.
Well, but at least in the playoffs, I was the DH. So I got no problem with that. I don't act like you don't know who I am, and then you know me so well that you call me by a nickname. I don't like that.
Yeah, I can tell you.
I would like to say I have no personal problem with the guy because I don't know him, so I don't have a problem with him because I don't know him. It's hard to have a problem with somebody you don't know.
Fair enough. There's definitely people in Kansas City that can't stand the guy. I'll tell you that though. Long before this, going back to 14 and 15, so I think people right away enjoyed your tweet. As we're talking to our NFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino, did you catch any of the Chiefs game on Sunday? Obviously, they're 7-0, and they were out at Arrowhead West in Vegas over the weekend.
Yeah, there was a nice little win. I didn't catch all of it, but it was on TV when I had the red zone on, so it would come up. Another nice win, 7-0. Hard to complain. Is it the weirdest 7-0 you've ever seen?
I mean, for all of them to be essentially single point games, single score games. It kind of feels like that way, Vinny. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's. But at the end of the day, you find ways to win games. That's your job. So it's. I don't know. It's weird. It's just weird, but it's great because it probably makes you better come playoff time is when you're playing in all these close games. So just another week of Chiefs excellence. Who do they play this weekend?
They have the Tampa Bay Bucks on Monday Night Football.
Is the game in Kansas City or in Tampa?
Kansas City.
Kansas City. Feels like 8-0 is on the way. hard to predict for a team to lose when they've never lost this season.
You mentioned you were watching Red Zone, so obviously they were keying in on that Bears-Commanders game throughout. I don't know if you sent a text to your teammate Michael Massey or not. I feel like that was a text-worthy game to send a condolence after a Hail Mary got him.
So I texted him when the Bears scored the touchdown, him in a group chat with another Chicago friend, and I said, fellas, it looks good. And then that happened, and Massey responded immediately and said, this is why I did not respond right away. I've seen enough Bears football to know that something wrong was about to happen.
Oh, man. You sent the text and everything. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I did. I felt good about it. I didn't know that. It was just a tough sequence of events for the Chicago Bears there.
This feels like you guys can commiserate a little bit because it feels like the Jets and the Bears have been stuck in kind of like quarterback purgatory for so long. They don't know like which way to go.
Yeah. The Jets are just no good right now. They've actually been no good for 13 years. It's tough. It's really tough. I think I saw something. It was somebody my age said that the last time the Jets were good, I was in eighth grade. That was a long time ago. I'm getting up there in age, so did you see the stat that 750 games if you gave up less than 250 yards, you score more than 20 points, you don't commit a turnover. In the NFL, you're 756-0. Now in the NFL, you're 756-1.
Like, I don't know what it is, Vinny, but like when franchises have really lost their way, they will lose in ways you're like, I didn't even think this was possible.
Well, okay, like we were just talking about with the Chiefs, right? They find ways to win. The Jets are the opposite. They're going along doing fine, and then they just find a way to lose. And it's not the most fun I've ever had as a fan, but I keep the faith. And guess what, fellas? Thursday night, Jets football in primetime again against the Houston Texans.
Now, that's in the Meadowlands, right? Are you going out to a game? Have you been there this year yet?
I have not been there this year. I was planning on going for the Sunday night game against the Colts in a few weeks. I don't think that'll be a Sunday night game anymore, and I don't know if I'll be going. But I will be on a trip this weekend, so I will not be in New York.
When you look at what the Chiefs are doing, we asked ourselves the same question, so I'll ask you, our NFL insider. What chance do you give the Chiefs to go undefeated? You know, 10%, 5%? You know, what chance do you give them to actually go undefeated?
To go undefeated, I mean, it's never been done before and win the Super Bowl, right? So it's funny, a team that has been so clear that they want a three-peat as bad as they do, you would imagine that the cherry on top would be to not lose a game.
yeah, that would add to it.
I don't know. I'd probably say less than 5%, but it's not zero. It's just hard to win every single game. I mean, you'd think something would go wrong. I'm not saying something will go wrong, but you would think at some point, you know, there will be a fumble or an interception or, you know, just something that doesn't bounce your way, because the game is hard enough that you need some things to go your way, and they've earned it. Like, I'm not saying by any stretch it's lucky, because it's not lucky. It's just hard to predict an undefeated season, even if things look pretty good for it.
Yeah, I think we believe that if they were to go to Buffalo and beat the Bills in a couple weeks, that's when maybe the conversation starts to become real for a lot of people at that point, because what, they'd be 10-0, I think, after that game, and at that point the Texans and Steelers would really be the toughest remaining games on their schedule.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that's like weird about teams potentially going undefeated is it feels like it's always like the game you don't think about that gets you. Like, they play the Raiders again, right? Like, it's just division games are just weird. They're just weird all the time. Like, it would be the division that would probably scare me the most, even if the teams aren't very good, just because it's like, it feels like it means a little bit more for those other teams.
Vinny, I want you to know the people in the text line are offering to chip in to get you a coffee table if you, you know, really want one.
Take that money and donate it to Wayside Waifs. I can get my own coffee table, but go help out those animals at that shelter.
Before we let you go, I did want to ask you, we mostly stick to football, but Salvador Perez winning the Roberto Clemente Award last night. How happy were you for Salvi to get the award?
Awesome. Couldn't have happened to a better guy, better teammate, better pillar of the organization, and better, you know, almost face of the city. He's just great. And I mean, the road he's had to the big leagues and being in Kansas City for as long as he has and winning a World Series, being the World Series MVP. I mean, it's just incredible what the guy's done for the city. And this feels like a cherry on top, too, of just being recognized by the league for what he does. And couldn't be happier for him. I know the whole team was pumped for him, and it was great to see him last night in New York. I know he would have rather been playing last night, but I'm sure that was just as sweet for him to be able to get recognized by the league like that. That was really incredible.
I think from the outside, we talk about how big of a deal major league players look about it. Salvador Perez said it was the most important award he's ever won. How do baseball players view that award, contextually? Because, like, I'm not an MLB player, but it seems like it is maybe one of the most coveted things you can do.
Yeah, it's probably the most prestigious award you can get, because it's great to be honored for the things that you do on the field. But we have such a big following and kind of profile that to be able to do things off the field is just incredible, and then to be recognized for kind of, you know, the efforts that you give off the field, it's really second to none, because playing Major League Baseball is great, and you know, all the awards that come with that and all the accolades and everything is fantastic, but being able to actually take what's kind of being given to you and provide for your city and provide for people around you is just, I mean, that's why you do it, right? Is for that. And for him to win that award, it's just fantastic.
Well-deserved, awesome. Part of his legacy in Kansas City continues to grow with something like that. Vinny, appreciate it, man. Enjoy the trip this weekend, and we'll check in next week.
Thanks, guys.
There you go. Vinny Pasquantino, our VNFL insider. And yeah, you asked about like the view of that award within baseball. It's a lot like the Walter Payton Man of the Year on the NFL side. You hear NFL players when they have that award, that one means so much to them. You know, it's one player, the entire league gets that, and it's not for just putting up unbelievable numbers or anything like that. Obviously, Salvador Perez has done that in his career, too. Do you think it helps his Hall of Fame case? Because
I don't think it hurts it. Well, I think it speaks to how much they love him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like no doubt it doesn't hurt it. I think it's just an added layer to the legacy. I don't know if, let's say you're a voter, and baseball voters are very weird when it comes to the Hall of Fame process, but if they're that close on vote, does that sway one voter? I don't know if it does, but it definitely just continues to build what, when you package it all together, a ridiculous career that he's going to end up having, and he has the on-the-field accomplishments. If hopefully he's healthy another couple of years to continue to build up certain numbers that some may need to see, I'm talking about those that are voting. I think he's a Hall of Famer. We'll get there. But to win this award, I think in Kansas City, it just continues to build how people will remember him forever. Add that to the list of accomplishments. So it was really cool last night to see, and also hear, by the way, from Salvador Perez. This is what he had to say about winning that award.
Super excited. I read a lot about Roberto Clemente, you know, he was an amazing player, but something that touched me is the way he helped people outside the field. So I want to thank you guys too, for continuing to do that for every kid, every foundation, and just excited to be here, excited for this award. And I tell you that after winning a World Series, that's the second best award I have ever been. I know I got some gold gloves, silver slugger, World Series MVP, but that means a lot to me.
Yeah, so right after the World Series title, you would put this one.
I absolutely think it helped the case. You mentioned this about Hall of Fame voters, and this is legitimately how they operate. Part of it is a popularity contest, straight up.
Yeah, look at David Ortiz.
Look at David Ortiz and look at Curt Schilling. Those are the most glaring examples of popularity contest. Every stat that exists for Curt Schilling supports him as being a Major League Hall of Famer amongst other Hall of Fame pitchers. He's a jerk. People don't like him. They don't want to vote for the jerk. David Ortiz, most of his stats do not support that he is of the type of hitter who deserves to be a Hall of Famer ahead of others. He's nice. People like him. They like being around him. And so Major League voters do that all the time. Salvador Perez might be one of the most well-liked players in all of baseball the last 10 years, and now he just won an award for his philanthropic work on and off the field. It can only help. I really think it helps. Is it a small percentage? Yeah, probably. They're still going to look at his on-field accomplishments and statistics to go with it. But it ranks there as the same as staying with the Royals your whole career, which I also think helps.
Well, I absolutely think will end up helping him.
Those things all move him up higher up the list. I think he's going to end up a Hall of Famer because of this, because part of being in the Hall of Fame is a popularity contest. And a lot of it for me is it's celebrating the people who make your sport great. He makes your sport great. That's what Salvador Perez does, in my opinion. I did enjoy watching the Yankees get their ass kicked last night, by the way. Salvi on my TV and the Yankees lost again. A twofer.
Sweep pop possibility tonight. Dodgers could get it done and send the Yankees packing without a single win in the World Series, which would be incredible. Obviously, all hands on deck for the Yankees tonight facing elimination. But Freddie Freeman, you could not have more of a dream scenario. We mentioned the, of course, walk-off grand slam in game one. But, he had another home run last night. He's playing out of his mind and just talk about Hall of Fame case. He is firmly solid. That'll be the marquee moment this whole series. He was already going to get in. But for Freddie Freeman, too, now he's got this World Series accomplishment to go with it.
He's got an all-time moment.
Mm-hmm.
But Salvi has all-time moments. He's a World Series MVP, not just a World Series champion. And you and I have gone through these stats before. This is what should actually help Salvi the most. The number of small market teams that win the World Series is none. It's like the Royals and no one. That's it. They're the only one who does it. They're the only one who has done it. The Rays and some of these other ones have gotten close. The Marlins, right, 20 years ago. It is not very often that a small market team actually cracks through, and they didn't. I also think that should help him. I was really happy for Salvador Perez.
Sure, of course.
For a variety of reasons. And I guess the other thing Vinny said about I guess he doesn't. He should probably get a rug though and a coffee table.
It was pretty.
You know, it really, you know, kind of make look, the place feel homey.
Now I'll be honest.
But he also said he don't want to spend his money away, and I don't really want to tell people to spend their money.
That part is obviously not relatable, right? On the dollar amount side, I can totally relate to him. Now he's married, okay, but I can relate to him on one thing. If it weren't for like my sisters telling me, hey, you should probably get a rug or a coffee table, I would probably be fine not having a rug or coffee table as well. So I can relate. I'm surprised his wife hasn't made him get a coffee table.
Maybe
or a rug
down
there. Maybe
that's Vinny's space.
Ah,
maybe the
okay,
basement is Vinny's.
Okay.
It's like the main
right?
cave or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, that's
okay.
Vinny land. Do with it as you please.
I like the TV
I'll guarantee
setup.
You they got area rugs on the main floor. Okay? Guaranteed.
I like the TV setup. He is correct, though. It would drive me crazy if he didn't have the TVs aligned. Like he says, he tilts the gaming monitors or whatever. That would drive me crazy. I would have to straighten him out. That would drive me crazy.
It well, doesn't bother him.
Yeah. That part I would have to. The TV then, wall, TV wall though, jealous, very jealous.
I've never done that. I've never really considered making that a thing. I guess I could do it in my basement, but
gotta have a big enough basement to make
it
happen,
It's not a very big basement, and it's not as big as Vinny's. That's just from the photo. And also, heed his advice and donate money to Wayside Waves. He's done a lot for them. We got to do that for the Chiefs Jets watch party. It was on his bat for Players Weekend this year. He's just a good dude. Plus, he's a great NFL insider, you know? Someone said, how could he not know who the Chiefs are playing next week? I'll be honest. Sometimes I have to think harder about it than I would
admit. Because the week just ended yesterday.
I said, like, last week, I got it wrong in the schedule order and kept saying they had the Panthers before the Bills. And the Panthers are definitely after the Bills. They got the Broncos in between that. A game I should not ignore because that is a annoyingly salty team so far in the NFL.
In fairness, if you're a Chiefs fan, who cares when they play them?
Also, we're going to play you audio here in about 10 minutes from a national analyst, if you want to call that individual that, sure. Here in 8 minutes or so.
Wow, dismissive. That's him talking about locking for
him. The audio we're going to play at 11 o'clock, I do question whether or not the individual should be an analyst. And in that piece of audio, that person also said the Chiefs were playing the Broncos this week. So, trust me, I think Vinny is just fine as our NFL insider.
And he's an actual, Vinny's an actual NFL insider. He comes on the show and he's been doing Rich Eisen.
Yes.
I think Rich Eisen's trying to steal him. Can I just say? I think Rich Eisen's
back off,
trying to,
Rich.
I think Rich Eisen
back
is
off.
Trying to steal our NFL insider.
I love Rich Eisen.
If he does that, he's going to have to be banned from the show.
I think Rich Eisen's phenomenal.
He is, but he's banned off. From the show if he steals Vinny Pasquantino permanently. If he starts going on that show all the time but won't come on this one anymore,
Rich
Eisen's banned.
You heard Vinny last week. Vinny said, sorry, I'll do a little local regional show. I also can do a national show. I think he's right. He's fine. I'm not worried about it.
As long as he says Tuesdays, I'm off limits. Sorry.
Yeah, just as long as it's like not all of a sudden I see some highlight, be like, every Tuesday, Royals first baseman Vinny Pasquantino joins and be like, whoa, 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 Rich, slow down. We don't need this in our life. That's all. Just want him to handle those things. The NFL, it's been a wild NFL season. So the Chiefs definitely can get upset. Each of the next 3 weeks are all losable games for Kansas City, which actually hasn't been the case for a little while, it feels like, because of when they were facing teams and why not. The Bucs showed that they have enough life next week that they will give you a challenge. The Broncos are giving teams a challenge. And obviously, we know that they can lose to the Bills, one of the better teams in the entire AFC. So this becomes an interesting stretch for the Chiefs before they get to lighten the load a little bit. And they get the Raiders again and the Panthers and all these other, I almost cussed, bad teams across the league.
Teams, huh?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Really bad
teams. Exactly how I said it, but it's what I wanted to say, at least on this. Someone says, what if next time he comes on here and he says, well, sorry, guys, I got to go real quick. Got to go to Rich Eisen's show. Damn it. I don't need this.
It would be pretty funny if at the end Vinny would have said, well, about time you guys are finishing up. I got to go on Eisen's show. That would be a pretty incredible moment.
Are you enjoying the Yankees getting their ass kicked every night?
I had it on
you
briefly
to be
yesterday.
A better series?
Yeah, I did. I'm definitely enjoy this side of it versus the Yankees dominating. You know, we've got over an hour. You know my feelings about Yankee fans and East Coast fans for the most part anyway. So, yes, I'm enjoying it. There's part of me that still would like it to be been a competitive series. But now I just want the Yankees to get swept. Screw it. They're a game away from getting swept. Let's just end it tonight. Let's just end it tonight. Go ahead, Freddie Freeman, another home run.
Become the World Series MVP.
Yeah. Mookie Betts can just come up with an RBI double early, get him on the board, let the Yankees fans get all depressed during the game. That's what I want to
happen. Judge can go 0-for-5 with four strikeouts, and then we can continue to say that Zach Greinke has more World Series hits than Aaron Judge. He does, by the way. He has two. Aaron Judge has one.
I feel like for also
Aaron Judge is like in his 30s, too. It doesn't have like unlimited World Series games to collect more hits.
It would be fun to see the Dodgers win the World Series in Yankee State. That would be like the ship's kiss moment.
And the Yankees were so desperate. They're sending Stanton around third. We all know how slow he is.
He's moving in slow motion.
Yeah. And it was Stanton or Cody in the hot dog derby. I'm telling you. I think I still take Stanton, but not by much.
Cody, I think you'd beat him. I think you would beat him.
He might be the only major league player I could get.
Yes, you could beat him.
I don't know. I think it'd be close. I think it'd be really close. All right, up next, I mentioned there's some audio that we got to play about the way one person at least is viewing the NFL. And the Chiefs, they're just not undefeated enough. We'll explain next.